Good morning. Great to be with you unpacking God's Word. Today we're going to be looking at an extraordinary but well-known story to many of us from 1 Samuel 17. It is a story about a youthful man who depends entirely upon God, leading God's people in a mighty victory, delivering them from a literal and metaphorical giant, which I was hoping would be a bit more of a surprise, but Duncan ruined it at the beginning. And we're asked a similar question as God's people today. The question that we're asked as God's people today is, when we face battles and the pressure of battles and the pressure of trials, who will we depend upon? Who will we turn to protect us and to deliver us? And we're going to mirror this morning, when we look at particularly application, we're going to mirror what this chapter looks like. This chapter talks about the God's people collectively. So we're going to look at the application for us as a collective. So us at Christ Church Fareham, who will we depend upon when we face battles? And we're going to look at what some of those battles are. But of course, there's an individual element. Sometimes we are experiencing battles, as has been shared this morning, which are more personal in nature to us. But we mustn't forget that we never stop being part of the collective. We're always part of a church family. And therefore, whilst we might individually feel those battle pressures more, we have brothers and sisters alongside us, supporting us. And the rallying cry and prayer for today's sermon is that we would, as we look at this story, and as the Spirit works amongst us, that we would have a renewed confidence. We would have a renewed confidence that we can depend on our mighty God, who has always been and will always be a mighty deliverer for his people. So I'm going to pray. There's 51 verses you might have realised in this. We're not going to read them all, but I'll guide us in that as we go along. But I'm going to pray for us before we do that. Father God, I'm entirely dependent upon you. Entirely dependent upon you, as we always are when we preach from your word here at Christ Church Fareham. For you to take my words, for you to use the words of your revelation to us, and by the power of the Spirit to use them in a way that transforms us. And I pray that you would answer that prayer this morning, that every single one of us would leave this place with a renewed confidence that we should only depend upon our mighty God who delivers his people. We pray and ask for this in your mighty name. Amen. We're going to look at this story in three sections. We're going to look at, first of all, the battle response. We're then going to look at unwavering dependence. And we're going to look at then, finally, dependent in battle. But we're going to start by reading verses 3 to 11 as part of the first section, battle response. So if you've got your Bibles, please open them. We're going to read from verse 3 to 11. If you haven't, it will come up on the screen. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath, from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again, the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and Israel and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were greatly dismayed. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. So as thinking a part of battle response, there's no doubt, if there was any from reading those verses, that the people of God are in a battle. It says that in verse 3, doesn't it? They're in a battle. They're on one mountain, part of the mountain. There's a valley in between, and their formidable foes, the Philistines, who a few chapters before they've already fought against and won a mighty victory. They're facing off against each other. But on this occasion, the battle's quite unique. You see, normally armies would go against one another. You'd muster all you could in your army, and it would be a fight to the death or who could claim victory. But on this occasion, we see it's an unusual offer, isn't it? It's an invitation for a one-on-one battle, winner takes all. So there's no doubt they're in a battle. But how are the people of God, led by Saul, going to respond to this? How are they going to respond? Well, it says in verse 11, doesn't it? They are dismayed and greatly afraid. The people of God, who a few chapters earlier, if you read back in your own time, have seen a mighty victory already over the Philistines, are now dismayed and greatly afraid. So we have to ask ourselves, why? Why have the people of God gone from this mighty triumphant victory to suddenly being dismayed and greatly afraid? Well, it's because their battle response is not one that adopts a godly perspective of this battle. They're not thinking of this battle being framed as God versus the giant. They're thinking of this battle as themselves in their human element versus Goliath. Did you note that nowhere in these verses, and as we go along, nowhere does it record the people of God turning to God, seeking him and asking him for help? You thought that might have been a good idea when you're facing such a formidable foe. So what are they left with? If they're not turning to God, they're not seeing as this is God's battle that we're fighting on his behalf, what are they left with? Well, there's an amazing amount of description in these verses, which is clearly intended by God to show us a real literal picture of how big and formidable the giant that they faced was. They were faced with a literal giant who scholars will argue, I don't really care, he was between 6'6" and in excess of 9 foot tall. But the caveat that they all add, which really makes me laugh, is that by ancient standards, he was a very tall man. This was a huge, huge tall man that would have been physically intimidating. And not just his height, but it talks about him carrying, and the weight in our pounds, in our measurements, if you like, is between 150 to 200 pounds is what his armour would have weighed. This is an absolute monster of a giant who they are facing. And not just physical intimidation are they facing in this battle, but they are facing his taunts. His taunts to them. There's a fantastic taunt, isn't there, in verse 8. Am I not the Philistine and you the servants of Saul? I'm here because I'm a giant willing and I've got the boldness to come and fight one of you. And yet your leader, who's your king, is so pathetic and scared that he can't even come out and face me. He's terrorizing them. And we see that if we skip on to verse 16, he did this for 40 days. For 40 days, morning and evening, he came out and they were faced with this physically intimidating, but also this verbally intimidating presence. And as I said, the most physically impressive of them, King Saul, 1 Samuel 9:2 says that Saul was head and shoulders above every other Israelite. So not only were they faced with this picture when they looked out, when they looked within, the most impressive physically amongst them, King Saul, was too scared to take this giant on. And in fact, we're going to go on to read, he resorts to trying to bribe a soldier to take him on. He offers his daughter's hand in marriage. He offers them money, an exemption from his kingdom service. We must give them credit. There is a bit of their battle response which is commendable. We see in verses 21 to 24 that they do line up and they do some war cries. But even these war cries end in an absolutely pathetic picture. Because we read what happens. The giant emerges and they flee. They flee because they are dismayed and greatly afraid. That is their battle response. Let's contrast this with David's battle response. Now, we're going to read some verses in a moment, but we're not going to read all of the verses, so I'm just going to give you a bit of backstory. David was not in the battle. He was the youngest child. He was at home looking after the sheep, caring for his dad, who they believe was aging, would have needed a bit of help, and was essentially sent back and forth to battle on this occasion to take food to them, but also to get the inside message of what's happening. because his dad was deeply concerned about his sons who were at war. So David comes, and David's at battle on one of his visits, and we're going to read from verse 21 to 26 to see the contrast of how David responds. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. As he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. The men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." Then David, and this is the verse to zone in on, then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" David's battle response is entirely different. He frames this as, this is a battle between God. This is a battle between God and the Philistines, who the people of God are representing. And he is absolutely indignant. He is indignant. "Who are you, Goliath? You uncircumcised Philistine," which essentially means you're not part of the people of God. You have nothing to do with God. You're an enemy of God. "Who on earth are you to take on the people of God?" Because the result is, if you're taking on the people of God, you're taking on the living God himself. And how dare you make that claim? How dare you make that claim? You see the difference? The difference between the people of God led by Saul, who've completely lost their bottle, gone, and David, who's holding this godly perspective and is indignant with rage. And that makes us turn to the question of, who will we turn to, Christchurch Fareham? Who will we turn to when we face battles? Who will we depend upon to protect and to deliver us? What perspective will we adopt? Will we look out at the battle we face? Will we look in at the reserves and the skills and the capabilities that we have? Or will we have a godly perspective and look out, yes, and say, "Whoa, that looks tough," but then look up and say, "But we know who's on our side." And I want to give a bit of flesh to the bones of a couple of battles, just so that we can put this a bit more detail onto this. The first example is ill health and sickness. Now, Duncan's doing a sermon next week, so I'm not going to go into the theology of this at all. I'm going to really try and not say much so I don't step on Duncan's toes. But it has felt like a battle in this last season. There's sickness, of course, in all of life. There's ill health in all of life. But this particular season for us as a church has felt like there's been unprecedented levels of varying degrees of sickness and ill health. Who are we going to depend upon in this battle? Who are we seeking and asking for help to protect us in amongst the pressures of the storm of battle, as well as asking us to be delivered from it and those amongst us that are suffering? The second example is a battle for biblical truth. You see, many people will argue that this book is outdated. It's outdated, it's man-made, it's largely irrelevant. Maybe there was a time and a place when this was worth following and listening to. We, Christchurch Fareham, face a battle to stand firm. And the battle is twofold. The first element is to follow this, to stand firm against the lies of this world that tell us that we can turn our backs on God's true revelation and word to us in this. The second element of the battle that we faced in standing up for biblical truth is continuing to proclaim it. Okay, we might keep following it, but we might shrink back. And I think the challenge for us is in the battle to say, we're not going to shrink back. With grace and love and wisdom, we're going to keep proclaiming this as the true words of life. Who will we depend upon to deliver us a mighty victory in the battle for biblical truth, Christchurch Fareham? Who will we turn to when we face opposition for proclaiming the truth of this book? So it's one thing for David to have this initial response, isn't it? You might, if you're unkind, say, here's this young kid who's rocked up at battle, he's done no work, he's brought a few sandwiches, and he's seen this giant and he's kind of mouthed off, if you're being unkind. But will he remain dependent? We know he started well, but will he remain dependent upon God when he's challenged? This is where we're going to read verses 28 to 37. Now, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." But David said, "What have I done now? Was it not just a question?" Then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same thing as before. When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Then Saul said to David, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." So we see two challenges here to David's dependence on God. The first comes from his very own brother. Now, any of us with siblings may relate to this. I am the youngest of three, so I can certainly relate to how annoying a younger brother can be and how sometimes dismissive an older brother can be. But he is challenged. He's challenged of something quite serious by his brother, isn't he? Of insolence, which just means rude and being rude or disrespect, and then wickedness. Wickedness of heart. He says in verse 28, doesn't he? "You've come down, you've mouthed off in order to goad some idiot into going out there so you can watch an entertaining bloodbath, haven't you?" That's what he's accusing him of. A very serious accusation. But in the face of this, David doesn't retreat. He doesn't retreat. He doesn't shrink back and think, "Well, I might just wind my neck in, still believe it, but I won't say it." No, he stands firm. He asks his brother, "What have I done?" And then I love verse 30, and then he goes on to say it again. He's not going to stop. He's going to keep saying what he believes, that this is a battle between God and this giant, and his God will win. Secondly, so all of this boldness from David, this dependence on God, leads him somehow in this pathetic state of the army that Saul hears about this. There's some young kid who's mouthing off saying, "You know, this is God's fight. Well, actually, maybe I better get him in and see if there's something in this." So David comes and David makes a bold claim, doesn't he? He makes a bold claim in verse 32. "Don't lose heart, for I, the young man, will go and fight this giant." And he's challenged, isn't he? He's challenged by Saul. Saul says to him, "But you can't. You're too young." And it's not necessarily an age criticism he's making. It's more, you've got no experience. You're not battle-hardened. You're not even in the army. You're back caring for some sheep. Probably thinking something like, surely if you were battle-hardened, you'd be with us on the front line fighting. David has the temptation here, doesn't he, to retreat, to stand down. "Oh, maybe you're right, Saul. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe there's someone better to fight. Still God's battle, but maybe there's someone else better." How does he rebuff this challenge? How does he stand up? He stands up, we see in verse 34 to verse 37, doesn't he? By stating his experience. He says, "I have come up against the lion. I have come up against the bear. laced in beautiful biblical imagery, isn't it, of the lamb being plucked from him. And yet he goes out as the defender to wrestle this lamb back. What a beautiful picture of what Jesus has done for us. He shows his fighting credentials. He shows his boldness. And he believes that this Philistine, Goliath, is no better. No better, no more intimidating than a bear or a lion that he's already faced. Yeah, it's important we don't misunderstand this. Very important we don't misunderstand this. David's confidence and dependence in this battle is unwavering, not because he has a CV that gives him the qualifications to do this job. His confidence is steadfastly in God. It's because of his dependence on God. And there's two things that he draws out. The first is in 36, which is a repetition. Once again, I will kill this Philistine this day because he has taunted God's armies. This is God's battle to fight, and I have an unwavering dependence that he will not be mocked. He will not be mocked. He will defeat this giant today. He will lay him out and he will use me for this task. And then 30 verse 37, where there's even actual credibility to David, of he's got fighting prowess, he's clearly got some skills, some physicality, some wits, where he can take the enemy down. He takes no credit. He says in verse 37, doesn't he? This is God. God delivered me. God delivered me from the paw of the bear. God delivered me from the lion. It wasn't my great fighting ability or my nous. It was God. In those situations, I was completely dependent on God to protect me and to deliver me from the battle that I faced. And therefore, I have steadfast confidence that he will do it for me again. So ask us again, Christchurch Fareham, those who are regulars here, will we continue to depend upon God in this same brilliant way that David did, unwavering, when we are challenged? When we're challenged in the midst of the battle, will we continue to depend upon God when we're accused of insolence and wickedness of heart for proclaiming biblical values? I've experienced it. I'm sure you've experienced it. It's very easy, isn't it? I remember in my work situations, particularly when I was in secular work, of very unpopular views, doctrines of marriage, doctrines of sex. I don't want to say anything right now. I want to proclaim this, but I could also just believe this and be quiet. No, I'm going to stand firm. I'm going to stand firm, and in grace and in love, I'm going to say when asked what I believe the Bible teaches on these things. Will we, Christchurch Fareham, continue to step out boldly into all God calls us to, regardless of our experience? Will we find our strength and our confidence in God rather than our experience and our ability? There's a range of tasks, there's a range of battles that we're thrust into. Some of them we might have some experience in, some of them we have no experience in. But do we depend upon our God, who, if he has called us to be in that battle and to serve and to fight that battle, do we trust in him? Do we trust in him to deliver us, to see us through? Right, so David has been resolute so far, we've seen, hasn't he? He's been resolute, he started well. He stood up to challenges from his brother and from Saul. But now he's about to face the giant himself, isn't he? Now he's about to stand before this physically intimidating, verbally intimidating giant. Surely we're going to see the first little tremor, aren't we? First little tremor in David's dependence. Well, let's read verse 39 to 50. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in his pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Then it happened, when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, and David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And the pen, and David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. As we look at this final section, dependent on God in battle, we see, we've just read, haven't we, that David goes into battle originally, verse 39, with Saul's armour. There's some debate about this, of people saying, was Saul kind of giving him his armour to try and claim a bit of the credit of if David was successful, he could say, "Well, he used my armour," so he didn't look completely weak. Or perhaps he was just saying, actually, if you're going to win, if you've got any chance in this, here you are. But David finds he's too big for him. He can't really function how he wants to. He doesn't feel equipped to use this kind of earthly weapon or weapons that he's been given. So he goes, as we read in verse 40, with his trusty sticks and stones that he's been used to using in his time as a shepherd, fighting off the bears and the lions. And what is he met with? Because this is what we're zoning into in this section. Is he going to be dependent on God in battle? He's met with Goliath, who is insulted that they've sent out this tiny little man to face him. Is this the best you've got? Is this how weak you think I am? Is this how disrespectful you are to me that you're not even sending out one of your best fighters? He curses him, doesn't he? We really curses him before his gods. And then he finally threatens him with death. "You will die today. I will kill you, David. And I will feed your body to the birds." So how will David stand up? Well, we see that David declares, he stands just completely dependent on God. Completely dependent on God. And he declares that God this day will give him a mighty victory. Why? Well, the first reason is because, once again, as we kept zoning into, this is a battle between God and the Philistine, where David is his representative. This isn't a battle between David and his earthly army, God's people, and there it's a battle between God himself. See that in verse 47, don't we? The battle belongs to God. That's why David can proclaim victory. He is so dependent and so confident that his God will not be mocked. His God will not be beaten. But verse 46 presents with another reason, which is really, really interesting and really helpful. So that the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. So it's not just about us winning battles so that the people of God might be successful, that our God might not be mocked. But there's actually something that spreads the good news that our God lives and that there is no other like him, no other that can be compared to him, no other name that can be depended upon and called upon like his. And I want us to remember again, I think I said it before, note once again that none of this has been about David. David at no point has spoken about the wonder of his ability, about his success, about his prestige. This is all about God. This is all about God. And there's something in that of when we're completely dependent on God, it's brilliant because it becomes as it should be, not about us. Not about our capabilities. There are many, many gifted people in this room with excellent gifts and ways that God has made you that enables you to fight battles. And we rejoice and we thank God for these things. But we don't depend upon them. We depend upon God who has given them to you and the one who fights our battles. Therefore, the battle victory is almost a formality, isn't it? At this point, I don't know about you, but you know, we read about it and it's brilliant. But it, of course it's going to happen. You've read, you know, 40-odd verses. Of course it's going to happen. Because you're zoned into David's way of thinking that, my God, no one is as oppressive and as mighty a deliverer as him. I'm depending on him, so of course I will have victory today. And we see, don't we, as the slingshot is pulled back and the stone hits the giant's head, causing him to collapse before his head is then cut off. Victory is achieved. Victory is had. And the method of victory, again, is so ridiculous. So ridiculous, the only one who can get glory from it is God. Clearly. Because if David had done something heroic where he'd, I don't know, jumped off 10 walls and trees and then slain him from the back, maybe we'd have been left with a sense of, oh, you know, David was an incredible fighter. This was an incredible warfare that should be studied in universities for years to come. No, this is all about God. This is all about God. So Christchurch Fareham, ask us again. Will we depend entirely upon God in battles when we face disdain, when we face curses, when we face threats? Will we, Christchurch Fareham, choose to live lives that focus more on how mighty our God is, how incredible a deliverer he is, rather than looking at the giants that we face and the battles that face us? Christchurch Fareham, will we choose to be courageous in battle, depending on God, that the earth might know that God lives? So whether we want to just be quiet and withdraw because we just can't face that battle today, and there's times for that, there's wisdom, let God lead us. But sometimes it's about us actually stepping out in discomfort. I might not face it today, but you know what? I sure as heck feel more confident and more motivated to step out when I know that part of stepping out and being God's representative in a battle that we face has a fruit that means other people will see who he is. Eyes will be open to who he is. Band are going to lead us in a song, so you can come up and as quietly as you can get ready. But as we draw to a close, hopefully you've seen the hero of this story is God. It's not David. As much as there's so much godliness in David we can imitate, and we should. But the hero of this story is God. It's God that fights the battle for his people, and it is God that delivers a mighty victory for them. And this story in of itself, this story, just this chapter, should renew our confidence that we can be entirely dependent upon God in life, but especially when we face formidable battles. However, we live many years after David, don't we? We live many years after David. And we know that our God has fought a mightier battle, don't we? He has fought a greater battle for us, and he has delivered victory for his people. He faced the most intimidating, formidable giant there ever was, of sin and death. And the Son of God, as we heard earlier in those beautiful verses that Duncan read to us, took on flesh, came to earth to win this battle. The righteous one laid himself down as the sacrificial lamb, taking the punishment that we deserved for our sin. Yet death could not hold this righteous one. Jesus, the Lion of Judah, rose up in extraordinary resurrection power, dealing a fatal and crushing blow to death. You think the noise of Goliath falling and hitting the floor, what a noise that would have been. What I would give to have been there to witness seeing this giant fall, hearing the thud and hearing the cry of celebration and praise to God. Think how much mightier that fatal crushing blow was that Jesus' resurrection laid on death. This is our God, Christchurch Fareham. This is our God. And this is why in Romans 8:31 it says, if God is for us, who is against us? Who is against us? Who can possibly stand against our God in any of the battles that we face? So as we sing this song to respond, Lion and the Lamb, beautiful declaration of who our God is and how he fights our battles, let us, Christchurch Fareham, depend on God, our mighty deliverer.